My name is Allie, and welcome to Funny Fat Friend, a podcast about this bodacious biracial babe trying to find herself in film. Here's an update. We have been protesting here in Louisville for 211 days for justice. 211 days. I have lost 3 friends. In the last 211 days while protesting. I wish
that I had a happier intro by now. And I also recognize that, of course, all of the issues that we are protesting for are not coming quickly, and we didn't expect them to come quickly, but still, fuck, you know? What do we have to show for 211 days? I have 3 less friends. And they still have hope. So that's good. Man, sorry to start so heavy. Well, I guess they're all technically heavy. I start with the same number count. We hit 211. And it just got to me this time. And here I am, talking about Harry Potter. But honestly, yeah, it's been something else to think about, and that is good, and that is what I need, but it still is ingrained with the fight, right? You can't listen to this podcast without thinking about Breonna Taylor. You can't listen to this podcast without thinking about Black women. Because that's what I am. Surprise! If you're just joining the podcast, that doesn't make any sense. So, do something. Keep doing things. If at this point you still haven't done anything at all, and you're a fan, what? How? If you really don't know how to help, like, or what you can do, if you are for real at a loss, please message me. I will help. I would lovingly help. But again, I'll run through my usual list. You can give to the Amazon wish list for protester supplies here in Louisville, which I'll keep linking in the description for this episode. You can give to the Louisville Bail Fund. People are still being arrested. My partner's court date is in January. What a dream. They're pursuing charges. That's ridiculous. Great. So give to the Louisville Bail Fund, please. We need it. It's still happening. People are still dying. It's not just getting arrested. People are dying. And yeah, we need political change, which is very aggravating that this is political. This isn't a political fight, right? Human equality and rights shouldn't be a political fight, but in America, we have made it so. So there's a very important runoff happening in Georgia that I've talked about. If you can, volunteer, give money. I will also link Fair Fight in the description. And they're helping to try and get those seats filled with people that will be able to make a change. Alright. Harry fucking Potter. Did you think we'd make it? Did you think? I a little bit didn't. It was tough goings in the middle. It was rough, dude. Goblet of Fire, Order of the Phoenix, Half-Blood Prince. I also never expected myself to be able to name the movies in order. And here I am, you know? Thank you for joining me on this journey. It has been really, really fun to go back and, like, analyze these films that I watched as a kid with, like, a more critical eye, even though I know this podcast doesn't use a lot of, like, eloquent criticism, but yo, I do have a minor in film studies. You would not know that based on how I talk about these movies, but I actually do have, like, a solid base of knowledge of what I'm watching. Oh, geez. Sure, but let's do it. I took last week off because I did math wrong, but it was nice to be able to have a week off, not have to talk about Harry Potter, even though I think I still ended up talking about Harry Potter with somebody on the phone last week, so that's good. So yeah, we've made it. This is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, part one, which I guess this is the series that really set off the final segment being in two parts. The only other series that I can even think of is Twilight, so I don't know if it was really, wait, did this one come out after Twilight? Yeah, wait, I don't know, and I'm not gonna look up when Eclipse, yeah, because those came out when I was in college, and this came out before I even finished high school, so yes, it did. It set the stage for the last book being two parts, but also, this is the longest book. It does actually make sense for them to do this, and I really respect that they shot the whole thing, all of the Deathly Hallows, at the same time. They just edited it into two films, so that is very cool. And it had one budget between the two films, which also, like, I was really surprised when I saw that. The budget for the entire, like, last two films was $250 million, which, what? That's pretty low. I know that's an insane amount of money, but, like, that's, like, pretty close to what they had for every other film in the series. And, for how much they did? Well, maybe not, actually. Thinking back about this entire one, there's not that much they had to pay for. But still, I was blown away. So yeah, $250 million. It made $934.3 million at the box office. It was the second highest grossing film of 2009. Oh wait, no. I'm looking at my wrong... Ah, damn it. I clicked on Half-Blood Prince. I make outlines, which you also probably wouldn't expect by how unorganized this podcast is. Doesn't that bum you out, knowing that I have an outline next to me and I still wild the fuck out? So anyway, yeah. This movie came out in 2010. It made $976.9 million at the box office. Yeah. Great. It did well. Sweet. Let's just fucking talk about it. I spent so much time already, and I want to, like, eat dinner. So we're gonna push through. Alright, we open, and ooh, we got a murky blue sky. Alright, and we hear some whispers. We are very into whispers in the Harry Potter series. I've never really thought that much about whispering until I watched this and when Yin Yang Twins released the Whisper song. Oh my gosh. You guys, someone needs to edit a summary of the Harry Potter series as the Whisper song by Yin Yang Twins. You would own the internet, I think. It's a great idea. Somebody who cares more than I do that. I don't even need credit. You don't have to say anything, alright? Just send it to me. That's all I want. Okay, keep moving. Here we go. Sweet, sweet, sweet. Then we see some eyeballs. These eyeballs, I recognize, it's Bill Nye. I am passionately in love with him. The actor, not this character, don't really get to develop much of a relationship with him as a character. He's only there shortly. Spoiler alert. But, yeah, him as an actor, oh my god. Oh my god. I'd just like to be in the same room as him. You don't have to look at me. You don't have to talk to me. I just want to exist in the same space. That'd be lit. Okay, so Bill Nye is the new Minister of Magic. His name is Rufus Scrimgeour. I don't fucking know. This is why I don't write their last names down, because I know that I'm not going to remember how to say them. But whatever, his name's Rufus. And he's addressing the wizarding media, stating that the ministry remains strong despite Lord Voldemort gaining power and the Death Eaters committing mass killings of muggles and infiltrating the ministry. So, like, big fucking statement from Rufus. It's like fucking Greg Fisher. What a little bitch. Talking so much shit like an idiot when he ain't doing fucking shit. I'm just gonna stay mad. I'm gonna stay mad. It's my right to stay mad, and I'm correct, and fuck Greg Fisher. I'm gonna run for mayor. Okay. Meanwhile, we see Hermione looking all sad in what I assume is her bedroom, which is, like, pretty tame. Her bedroom is, like, pretty melancholy. I expected it to be, like, fucking stacks on stacks on stacks of books and stuff. I don't think the set dressing for Hermione's room was done well enough. I know that that is, like, a nitpicky thing, but, like, really, this nerdy teen wizard has a... It looked like a guest bedroom. It didn't look like anything, but okay. All right. These are the things I complain about. So yeah, she sat in her bedroom. There's a copy of the Daily Prophet with a headline saying more muggle deaths. And it's unnerving for her because her parents are non-magical. They're muggles. God, I still hate the word muggle. It makes me feel gross. Yeah. It's gross. Muggle is gross. It was JK's way of saying the N-word for sure, right? Let's just say it. Let's say it out loud. Because nobody else has said it to me yet. It was JK's way of being able to say the fucking N-word. And it's not okay, and I hate her. Okay. Then we see the Dursleys are packing up their car, and they're moving. And finally, we see Ron standing outside his little hut where his family's staying since, you know, his house was destroyed in the last movie. R.I.P. It was really sad. Hermione casts the Obliviate spell on her parents, making them forget her existence. But we see, like, she gets removed from, like, all the pictures in her house. I thought Obliviate was just, like, erasing her mind. So why would it take her out of the pictures? But I guess she just erased her existence? I don't know. It doesn't add up. It was a cool visual. I know why they did it. It was neat to look at, but it didn't make actual logical sense. And that's Harry Potter, and that's it. We've summarized the series. It's cool to look at and doesn't make any logical sense. Phenomenal. Okay. Harry comes downstairs, and Mrs. Dursley is standing in their, like, empty living room, and she's sad because they've lived in the house for 20 years, and Harry explains that they'll be tortured if they stay or know where Harry is going. And we finally get to see Mrs. Dursley as, like, a real person. And she says that she knows, like, what the stakes are. Because he didn't just lose a mother that night, you know, to Voldemort. She lost a sister. And she's crying. And it's, like, the first time we've seen her humanized. I will give... This movie I was looking the least forward to. That's definitely not the way to put it. I didn't want to watch this one again because I have such a powerful memory of watching it as a kid. Because we watched it right before we went to the midnight premiere of part two. Because my best friend in high school was extremely into Harry Potter. And I agreed to go to the midnight premiere of the last one with her. In fucking costume. Oh, jeez. I'm gonna have to find a photo. And I'll put it in the last picture for the last episode. I hope I can find it. I look hilarious. With my friends who are fully invested in Harry Potter, and then there's goofy ass me. It's probably the best photo that exists of me. But I hadn't seen part one of The Deathly Hallows, so we watched it the night of the midnight premiere before we went to the midnight premiere, and it was so awful that I didn't want to go see part two. And that's my memory. It's like throwing a fit and being like, why the fuck would I even want to watch the next one? What's the point? So that's my memory of this film. And that's how I felt going into it, being like, I don't really want to relive that. But it's better. It's better now being a grown up, I guess. I don't know. Great. Cool. But I will give the film that what I definitely thought of as a kid as like, boring and dumb, I definitely respond to more as like emotional depth and character development and realism with these characters, of like finally getting to see them and relating to them more on like an emotional level, and getting to see them in these situations that are still wild, but still have some connection to things I can identify with, of conflict in relationships and challenges in my own life. So I will give it a thumbs up for that. And so I'll actually have a lot to talk about at the end, maybe. We'll see. I don't know. Okay, cool. So yeah, Mrs. Dursley is a real fucking human being and not a caricature of an evil stepmother. Wow. It took 7 movies? But it's fine. Yes, all women. Okay, cool. So the Dursleys get in their car. Ron goes out to see Arthur, his dad, who's working on like a little magic radio thingy, which is important later, I assume. And then the Dursleys get in the car, and Dudley asks why Harry isn't coming with him. And Harry says he doesn't want to, and calls out his uncle for thinking he's just been a waste of space. Then Dudley walks up to Harry and shakes his hand and says he doesn't think that he's a waste of space. And it's very sweet. Right? Dudley was the worst. Dudley was the worst of all of the Dursleys. And it did take Harry literally saving his fucking life for him to get some redemption, right? For him to relate. But that is that bullshit. That is that bullshit work that we have to put in with white people to make them care about something. But it is beautiful to see that he cares. That is hopeful. It made me feel very hopeful and nice. Also, that actor who played Dudley Dursley is in The Queen's Gambit. And I know that at least 2 people listening to the podcast are now going, holy fucking shit. Right? Right. That's what I said when I found out. Back on it. I'm taking way too long. Surprise. Okay, cool. And the Dursleys drive away. Hermione leaves her house and starts walking down the street. And then we finally get the title card of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 in the sky. So we see some gloomy skies and lots of smoke and wispy things. And Snape appears and goes into a hall filled with people standing around a long table. And hovering above the table is a woman frozen in air on her back. And it is terrifying imagery. Like, it is a very simple image, but it's so fucking scary. And I really can't grasp. I'm gonna grasp it right now. Why? Is the vulnerability of her, the like complete control that we're seeing. It's the first time I guess we've seen that use of that torture spell, I guess, or or whatever. Or wait, I don't remember. The one that, like, you can take control of somebody's body. That. Like, it when they did that to the little spider, that was scary. And seeing this woman is very similar, but even more obviously human and scary. And I hated it. I think it might be the most uncomfortable I've been in the series, is this woman who's suspended above this table as people casually talk around her, and she's in obvious, incredible, terrifying pain. Yikes! Okay. Cool. So, Snape joins the table. We see that the Malfoys are there. Snape tells Voldemort of Harry's impending departure from Privet Drive. And we also see a man named Pius, and he has a very bad goatee. And I assume he will matter later. Voldemort then takes Lucius Malfoy's wand, because his own wand is twins with Harry's and therefore can't kill him. Can't relate. Do not understand, but okay, whatever. Then we reveal that the floating woman is Charity Burbage, who's a teacher at Hogwarts, and she teaches Muggle studies. That's awful that they name it fucking the slur for non-magical people. That's gross. They name it Muggle studies. That's fucked up. Or maybe he's just calling it that, right? Surely they don't actually call it that. Somebody who read the books, tell me if that's really what they fucking call it in the books. Because that's fucked up. Okay. But she believes that Muggles and wizards can and should be together. And then we hear her speak for the first time. Like, she gathers enough, like, strength, even though she's, like, in this horrifying torture state. She speaks for the first time when she sees Snape, and she says, "Please, we're friends." And then Voldemort kills her. And it's, oh, what a doozy. This one's a fucking bummer after bummer after bummer after bummer, and I was right. Not liking it as a kid, I understand. And I still don't like it now as an adult. I do respect it more. But it's still awful. It's an awful film. I think they should have just fucking bit the bullet and made a one giant fucking 5-hour film and just seen how it went, you know? Just, like, why not? So yeah, Voldemort kills her. Then, just to make it even worse, his snake fucking eats her body. And we see a little shot of Malfoy, who looks shaken to his core, just like all of us. Great. The Order of the Phoenix show up at Harry's house, including Ron and Hermione, and we meet Bill Weasley, played by Domhnall Gleeson. He is one of my celebrity crushes, which definitely is a surprise to some people because he is just the palest man that has ever existed, I think. He's almost so translucent, but I am desperately in love with him. And, cool. Alright, and they've come to escort Harry to safely use... They've come to transport Harry to safety. And they use Polyjuice Potion to create decoy Harrys. And this is one of the most disturbing scenes that I've ever seen in film. It's like... all of them drinking Polyjuice Potion and turning into Harry, and, like, their faces, like, morphing and shit. It's awful. It's awful, and we didn't need to do it. We didn't need to do it, alright? Because Parent Trapped it where there's just a bunch of them all of a sudden, and I would have been totally in. But no, they had to go all in and be like, this is what it would look like if you magically changed into someone. It's like, why? Why is that what it has to look like? Why couldn't it be an immediate change? It's fine. Okay. During their flight, they're ambushed by Death Eaters. And the Death Eaters kill Mad-Eye Moody and Hedwig. And when Hedwig died, I was ready to fucking turn it off. I was ready to turn the fucking TV off. I had to pause and walk around. Evil. Evil, evil, evil. Evil. Why? Literally, why? It's senseless. Senseless villainy. The fuck? Okay, Harry and Hagrid arrive at the Burrow, and the Weasley, which is the Weasleys, and Lupin brings George Weasley, who is badly injured, who makes sure Harry is in fact Harry by asking him a question only he would know, and reveals that Harry is in fact Harry. And he reveals that they have been betrayed since the Death Eaters knew they were moving Harry that night. And Harry's upset and tries to go out on his own because he doesn't want anyone to die for him. But Ron stops him and is like, bitch, this isn't about you. This is much bigger than you, fucking big-headed ass bitch. Like, this isn't a war just about Harry Potter. But even though that's the name of the books, we have been fed to believe everything's about Harry Potter, and it's not. It's just like this bonus thing for Voldemort. But yay, Ron is finally a well-done character. It took 7 movies for Ron to not be this idiot, bumbling, shitty character. And that's like the theme. That's the theme of this film. People have emotional depth and are not one note. Wow. Okay. The next day, while getting ready for Bill's wedding, Harry and Ginny have a cheeky little kiss, which I did not realize they were like a thing officially, I guess. I guess I just like blocked that out. I don't remember that really happening fully. Oh, wait, no, I do. Okay, they kissed in like the room of all the lost shit. But also, like, I don't know, whatever, romance. Who knows? It can happen anywhere. Okay, so then Rufus, the Minister of Magic, arrives with Dumbledore's will. Ron receives Dumbledore's Deluminator, which is that little thing he used in the first movie to take all the lights out and stuff. Hermione receives a copy of the Tales of Beedle the Bard. Sure. And Harry receives the first golden stitch that he caught in a Quidditch match. So that's nice. Rufus reveals that Harry was also bequeathed the Sword of Gryffindor, but it's gone missing. Don't add up, sis. Then there's a wedding. So that's nice. We stan a wedding. I love weddings. It's Bill Weasley and Fleur. I don't know how to say her name. But Fleur, she was in the Triwizard Championship. She was the chick from the Beetlebirds. Oh, I don't remember the name of the school. Harry saved her little sister in the challenges, and that was cool. Yeah, but they're so young. But whatever works. Okay, Luna Lovegood, the absolute goddess, and her father are there, and he is too tan, and I don't like it. But they're also at the wedding, and Harry meets him, and we see he has a fun little triangle necklace on with, like, a circle in it. And I bet that'll be relevant, because it's, like, swinging around all over his chest, and the camera's following it. Luna takes her dad away from them, though, and says, Harry doesn't want to talk to us right now, but he's too polite to say so. Luna Lovegood, absolute queen. She's the best thing. Yeah, unequivocally, the best thing about the series is Luna Lovegood, and I'm right. Okay. Then Harry goes to talk to some old people about Dumbledore and how his family had some scandals, and Harry didn't really know him that well. And there was this historian chick who lived, like, in his hometown that knew him really well. And it's really awkward how it's brought up. That's a running theme also, is that they're bringing up a lot of information in really, like, not natural ways that are obvious that we need to, like, know later. So there's a historian that knows a bunch about Dumbledore in his hometown. Great. Okay. Then, a glowing orb appears in the tent and announces that the Minister of Magic is dead. And that they are coming. They are coming. And Death Eaters come lighting things aflame, and Hermione apparates her, Ron, and Harry out of there to the theater district in her hometown. Because that's what she thought of. And she's the most powerful woman of all time. She is, though. They would have died in the first book without Hermione. Alright, so they change into normal clothes because, you know, they're at a wizard wedding, so shit was lit. And they change into normal clothes and go to a diner to regroup when they are attacked. And Hermione takes them out. Because, again, they would be dead without this smart woman. Harry recognizes one of the attackers from the astronomy tower when Dumbledore was killed. And Ron recognizes the other from wanted posters. And Hermione wipes their memories. They don't kill them, they just wipe their memories to keep them safe. So the three go to Grimald Place, which is the house that Sirius owned, his family's house. And there's a spooky ghost of what I think is Dumbledore that, like, meets them there. It, like, jumps out at them. And Hermione's like, I think it might have been a deterrent for Snape if he came, like, around to be, like, scared off by the man he murdered. Fuck. Fuck. Cool. That night, Harry has a vision of the Wandmaker Ollivander being tortured by Voldemort. About his wand. But we already know about his wand. See, this is the thing that I'm... Voldemort's already figured out that he can't kill Harry with his own wand because they, like, are brothers and won't attack each other to death. So he needs somebody else's wand. So why is he still yelling at Ollivander about it? I don't know. Oh, we find out later. I figured it out. Okay. The next morning, they discovered that the RAB from the fake Horcrux locket... Remember the end of the last movie where we found the Horcrux and it's a locket and somebody left a note being like, Voldemort, I got it. I got your real fucking thing and I can't figure out how to break it, but I want you to know it's me, R.A.B. We figure out that R.A.B. is the younger brother of Sirius Black. Regulus Black. So that's cool. And Creature, the house elf, tells them that Mundungus Fletcher broke in and stole many items from the house, including the real locket. And Mungus was one of the guys that helped Harry escape, who, like, changed into a Harry. And so that sucks. I mean, he's, like, feeling guilty. I don't know. But Harry's like, go fucking get him. Because I guess house elves can find anybody. I don't know. House elves have... way too much power for being kept down like they are. But also, that's slavery. Okay, so Creature and Dobby apprehend Fletcher and bring him to them, to the trio. And he reveals that the locket is in the possession of Dolores Umbridge, who took it from him while he was trying to sell his stolen goods in Diagon Alley. So using Polyjuice Potion, the three infiltrate the Ministry, which is just so damn awkward and, like, the most uncomfortable scene of these fucking adult actors with these kids' voices going into a bathroom all together and flushing themselves down magic toilets to get into the Ministry. I don't fucking understand. There's so many things. I have so many fucking questions about why this is the way it is. Why? What? Why? What? The government building for wizards is accessed via fucking toilets? What? I'm furious. Maybe it's a metaphor for government. You have to fucking flush yourself down the shitter in order to work there. Okay, but, like, is it worth it? I don't know. And also, when you transform into somebody else's body, your voice would sound like them, right? Because our vocal cords are made the way they are because of the way our body is. Like, it's not... I don't understand. I have so many questions. This is stupid. This is gonna hurt. I have to get done. I have stuff to do. Okay. Great. The kids go and infiltrate the ministry. They find the locket around Umbridge's neck when she ends up in an elevator with Hermione. And we see they're printing lots of, like, propaganda and stuff down there. And Harry and Ron meet back up and head down to the courtroom where Umbridge is, like, presiding over fucking court now. And Harry and Ron meet back up and head down to the courtroom together. There's a trial of a muggle-born witch, and they're charging her with stealing a fucking wand and not being a witch because she isn't pure blood. Racism. It's everywhere. Such a tale as old as fucking time, JK. God, I hate her. Okay. Luckily, Harry stuns Umbridge, saving her the poor woman on trial, and Hermione retrieves the locket, and they're recognized on the main floor when they get back up to the main floor, and the three escape by apparating into the wilderness. But Ron is injured badly because Hermione changed where they were going midway, and he got splinched, is the word she used. And his arm is just, like, fucking obliterated. It's, like, shredded. And Hermione puts protection spells around them while helping Ron, trying to get him healed. And they set up a magical tent and make a little base. And they used the radio that Arthur had in the first scene of the movie to listen to a nightly report that is just them listing everyone who has died. Fuck. All right. So they take the Horcrux and they try every spell they know but are unsuccessful at destroying it. Ron says it seems strange that Dumbledore sent Harry to find all these Horcruxes but didn't tell him how to destroy them. And honestly, yeah. And while wearing the locket, Harry sees a vision of Voldemort interrogating and killing the wand maker Gregorovitch, who claims a teen boy stole the legendary Elder Wand from his shop. Still, at this point, we don't know what the fuck is going on, unless you read the books. I was just like, sure. So, when people wear the locket, it makes them, like, angry and evil, because it's part of fucking Voldemort's soul attaching to them, and that's bad. So when Ron is wearing the locket, he's overcome with negative feelings and gets jealous of Harry and Hermione, thinking that they're, like, falling for each other. And since they can't apparate right now, they begin just walking towards civilization to try and continue their investigations. Hermione figures out that Gryffindor's sword will destroy the Horcrux because it has basilica venom, which is the big spider, no, the serpent guy. And while discussing, Ron comes in and says he's upset with being left out and can't believe they haven't made enough progress on their fucking journey yet. And Fool just falls out with Harry before abandoning him and Hermione. Hermione returns heartbroken after Ron leaves, but she and Harry dance. It's like, dance. And they're just happy again. It's so bullshit. It's so stupid. It's like, really? Come on. Okay. Dances. And then Hermione shows Harry a symbol she's found in the book Dumbledore left her. And Harry says he saw the same symbol on a necklace that Luna's dad had. So that triangle with a circle. And then they head to go look for the sword at Godric's Hollow, which is where Dumbledore's family lived, where his parents died, where he was born, and the birthplace of Gryffindor. So they think probably there, maybe. When they arrive, it's Christmas Eve, which is today. If you're listening to this on the day this is coming out, happy Christmas Eve. If you don't celebrate Christmas, happy December 24th. I hope you still didn't have to work today. That's nice. Okay. Harry sees a graveyard.
Yikes.
And they find his parents' graves. And Hermione, like, magics a little nice wreath. And then they see someone's watching them. And they follow her to a house, which is where his parents were killed. And it's sad. And the woman is revealed to be Bathilda Bagshot, which is who the old people were talking about at the wedding, who, like, was a great historian that knew all about Dumbledore. Bathilda lets them into her house. Harry sees a photo of the man from his vision that was torturing the guy who said that a teen stole the Elder Wand. So he's like, who is this? But she doesn't say who it is. And then she just, like, starts fucking speaking parcel tongue at him, which is, like, that weird snake language that's whispers. Edit the whisper song. Ying yang twave. Okay, they start whispering at each other. And then she reveals herself to be Nagini. I think that's how you say it. Voldemort's snake pal. And she was possessing Bathilda's reanimated corpse, which is fucking gross. Why didn't she just take some polyjuice potion? I guess she's a snake, so it doesn't work. It's scary as fuck. Cool. Hermione and Harry escape into the Forest of Dean, a place she visited with her parents. So family keeps coming back for Hermione. It is significant and sad. She doesn't get to be with them. Then Hermione identifies the mysterious thief in Harry's vision as Gellert Grindelwald, and that she had accidentally broken Harry's wand while she was fighting Nagini. And she gives him her wand while he keeps watch while she sleeps. During his watch, Harry sees a Patronus in the form of a doe, which leads him to a frozen pond. Gryffindor's sword lies beneath the pond's ice, which Harry breaks and jumps into. The locket around his neck starts to strangle him, of course, but Ron appears and rescues him. Yay! And the fucking sound design in this scene, and all the scenes when they're in the forest, it's fucking incredible. Honestly, it's worth watching this film for the sound design. It's the best that it's ever been. It's the best. It's better than a lot of movies. It's really cool. It's really clever. The way they move from, like, diegetic noise, everything, I think almost everything in it except for music is diegetic. Like, and there's not very much music in this one. It's bonkers. It's lit. It's so good. It's so cool. It's hard to explain. I would need to, like, play clips of it to explain. And I'm not going to do that. So, just watch it for the sound design alone if sound interests you. Even if it doesn't, it's still, you would recognize how cool it was. I'm very certain. It's very immersive. Okay. Harry speaks parcel tongue to open up the Horcrux. Because somehow he fucking figured that out. I guess maybe I blacked out when it was obvious that would work. I don't know. And a giant smoke monster thing comes out saying all his worst fears to Ron, like spiders, and Harry and Hermione saying he's nothing compared to Harry, and then their naked animated bodies, Harry and Hermione's naked animated bodies start fucking making out, and it's awful, and I wanted to turn the film off again. No. But Ron wields Gryffindor's sword and destroys the Horcrux. Back at camp, Hermione yells at Ron, rightfully so, for just saying hey to her when he comes back. And Ron reveals that his little light remover thing from Dumbledore also showed him his way back to her. Aww. And they reconcile. Ron also happens to have a casual second wand he just fucking has. He took off somebody and gives it to Harry. And the three decide to visit Xenophilus Lovegood to learn more about the symbol in the book Dumbledore gave Hermione. So at Lovegood's, he explains to them that the symbol represents the Deathly Hallows. Ding, 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 ding. Name of the movie, finally. Hermione reads the story of the Hallows, giving us the coolest part of the entire film series. It's this dope animation sequence telling of the three magical objects that can make a wizard master of death. There's the Elder Wand, which is the most powerful wand in the world, the Resurrection Stone that can bring anyone back from the dead, and a Cloak of Invisibility. Lovegood shows how all three make the symbol, and Hermione says the mark was on a grave in Godric's Hollow, and Lovegood says a family there was said to have been the origin of the story. And then he gets all weird and won't let them leave. And he reveals that Luna Lovegood has been kidnapped. And he summons Death Eaters, intending to hand over Harry in exchange for his daughter. And I'm like, okay, fully understand, do it. But of course, Harry, Ron, and Hermione apparate as Lovegood's house is destroyed. So fuck, it was for what? Sadness. So back in the wilderness, they're quickly found by snatchers, which are just, I guess, bounty hunters. They look like fucking Jack Sparrow from fucking Pirates of the Caribbean. These motherfuckers wandering around. Harry's knocked out and has a vision of Voldemort interrogating Grindelwald, who reveals the wand is with Dumbledore, the Elder Wand. And now we know what the fuck the Elder Wand is. That Dumbledore has it. It's buried with him underground. Hermione uses a curse to disguise Harry when he gets knocked out, and they give aliases when they're taken, but the snatchers take them to Malfoy Manor anyway, suspecting they aren't who they say they are. Bellatrix Lestrange shows Harry to Malfoy to identify him, but he can't confirm it's him. So we're like, ooh, is Malfoy not completely bad? Obviously he's not completely bad. But like, yeah. Okay. Bellatrix then sees they have the sword of Gryffindor, so she imprisons Harry and Ron in the cellar where we see that Luna, Ollivander, and Griffhook are all imprisoned, and Bellatrix tortures Hermione for information about the sword, because she says that it was in her vault at Gringotts, and how the fuck could it get out? But honestly, how the fuck did it get out? Harry pulls a broken mirror from his sock. I don't understand how he got it or why this works, but he pulls it out of his sock and asks for help, and Dobby fucking apparates into the cellar to save them. So Dobby takes Luna and Ollivander to safety, and then tells Harry and Ron to meet him at the top of the stairs in 10 seconds. And Harry and Ron rush to save Hermione, and a battle ensues that sees Harry disarm Draco Malfoy. Dobby drops a fucking chandelier on Bellatrix, forcing her to release Hermione. But Bellatrix throws her knife at them as Dobby grabs everyone and apparates. They arrive at Shell Cottage safely. Ron, Hermione, and Harry. But they find that Bellatrix's knife has fatally wounded Dobby. And he dies in Harry's arms. Harry insists they bury Dobby without any magic. And then, for added salt to the wound, we see fucking Voldemort break into Dumbledore's tomb and steal the Elder Wand and cast this insane bolt of lightning into the sky, and that's the end of the movie. Fucking roll credits. Why would you ever want to watch the next film? I was right as a kid. What the actual fuck? Why was this where they ended it? That's idiotic, in my mind. Also, fuck J.K. Rowling. They killed Dobby. God! Also, there are no people of color in this film. God! Yuck. Fucking yuck. Killing Dobby. Oh my fuck. Yeah, it's pretty fucking revolting. It's so emotionally manipulative, lazy, and fucking gross. I'm disgusted. I'm furious. I thought I would have more to talk about. Because, you know, I was talking such a, like, mad game about, oh, there's so much, like, more emotive and realistic characters in this one and stuff. And, like, but then, yeah, now I remember the ending again. We got to the ending again, and I hated everything, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. And I'm teared up again, and I'm furious. This movie sucks. I have a hiccup. Yuck. Alright, I'm just getting through the end of it. It has 77% on Rotten Tomatoes. Correct. It's one of the lowest scores of the Harry Potter movies, and that's correct. On Letterboxd, it has a 3.7. Do I relate? Yeah, I relate to the fucking bullshit, antiquated, fucking lazy ass writing being how people I identify with or can see myself as being subjected to. Yeah. Man. Fuck. God, I'm furious. So mad. Fuck this movie. Do I relate? Before Dobby died, Yeah, maybe a little bit. I related to Harry, Ron, and Hermione more in this one. Of them getting to be just human beings. Yeah, because we didn't have all the conflama of fucking, they're going to wizard school, woo, and stuff. It was just them being humans and having to fucking struggle and figure things out with each other and themselves, and like putting things that they wanted aside for the greater good and that sort of thing. Like, I know it's like a giant evil wizard and like the world ending, but like you can still see it now, right? That a lot of people everyone should be thinking about like needing to put themselves to the side to make our world better, because that's what we need to do. If you're in the position where you have the privilege of being able to put yourself aside rather than having to fight for your life to be equal, then you need to be doing that. And so that's very parallel to this film, right? With them struggling, like these privileged kids of having to do that, make that choice and do the damn thing. Do what needs to be done. Even if it is a super fictionalized, like, wizarding world or whatever, we still have class struggle in it on top of it. Killing Dobby, you motherfuckers. But that's also real, I guess. Yeah, this one of the sweetest men I've ever known was killed a couple weekends ago for a senseless reason. And he worked really hard with the protest and just trying to make this world better. And he was taken from us. He was fucking senseless. But we don't get to, like, just... A stupid fucking shitty white woman doesn't get to write that fucking story, though, you know? But I guess she does, because that's the world that we live in. So let's make that not the world we live in. Cool? Great. Okay. This one's been so very heavy, but that's life. And I'm gonna sign off. I'm done. I need to be done. And I hope you have such a wonderful weekend and holiday if you celebrate. If you're not able to see family, I know it's really tough. I'm not gonna see most of my family this year. But know that love exists regardless of sight, right? And it always has and it always will. And we may not be together physically, but you're always going to love each other no matter what. Cool. I've been your friendly neighborhood fat friend, Allie. And I would flush myself down a toilet for you. Anytime. All right. We'll talk at you next week for the end of this fucking thing. Bye.